Drive You Home Tonight by Telm 393. Read by Mist Marauder. It's dark out, and Eddie's sitting on a bench. This street is less well lit than the ones closer to his home. Even the streetlight nearby dim and flickering. But that's pretty much the point. He feels like he should be smoking. He's not. He doesn't smoke. He feels like he should be wrapping his hands to get ready to fight. He's not. He stopped. He was going through a phase. He's found himself only a few blocks from where he used to fight, and he's not interested in going over. Not like he's down for tonight anyway. And they'd never let him back in. This is just where his body took him, searching for less light. It was a long walk from his house to here, and probably not a safe one, though he's pretty sure he took a bus somewhere along the way. But he wasn't really thinking, and there's no such thing as a long walk for him anymore, after years of lugging around heavy supplies for miles. The only thing he has with him is his phone in his pocket. He doesn't even have his wallet. He touches his neck. No dog tags. No need for them in civilian life. Except that's not true. People die suddenly in civilian life too. He should know. People become unrecognizable, unidentifiable, with no war required. Maybe everyone should wear dog tags, just in case. Dressed in a nondescript t-shirt and jeans, and with nothing weighing him down, Eddie feels like he might crumble, as though what weighs him down may actually be what's holding him together. There's not that many people around. The ones who are give him suspicious, unfriendly looks. It's good that they don't recognize him yet. He doesn't know how many times he's been here, on this street, half concealed by shadows. He doesn't exactly understand why this is where his body, usually practical, takes him when he's at his most alone. He probably could if he tried even a little, but he doesn't. He wonders if, at some point, someone will come up to him and try to pick a fight. He'll have no choice but to defend himself then. Blunt force against blunt force. No one comes up to him, which is for the best. He left the house to get away from the blunt force. At home, he kept staring at the wall and thinking about how easy it would be to bang his head against it until his scalp split and bled. The thought made him uncomfortable. The idea of a smear of blood on the paint that Christopher could see. The thought of the laceration that it might leave on his forehead. The potential trip to the hospital and the questions he'd have to field. Seemed like a better idea to do something less dangerous than be by himself, surrounded by walls. Because he was by himself, as much as he thought for a moment that if he got dizzy enough, bloody enough, he'd see Shannon out of the corner of his eye, Shannon peeking out of his room, smiling, happy. It wasn't easy for Shannon to be happy. Just like saying Christopher got his happiness from Eddie was always going to be a joke. Through the anger, the betrayal, the dismay, Eddie knows it makes sense that he wasn't enough for Shannon. It's hard for anything to be enough when it's so damn difficult to even feel. When all you can do is try and try to move forward and never quite get where you want to go. All while everyone around you gives you dirty looks. Eddie forgave Shannon for just about everything, because he was finally able to admit he understood. He wonders if she forgave him. For running away. For making her the villain. for acting like the time she wasn't there negated the time she was. But all he wanted to do was protect Christopher. And that was always more important than her. And he doesn't think she really begrudged him that. Because Christopher was always more important to her too. Christopher was the most important part of Eddie and Shannon. When they weren't in bed together, chasing the emotions they were also supposed to make each other feel vertically, or with Christopher, playing happy family so well that they could believe they were one just because of the buoyancy of Christopher's joy, he and Shannon were always thousands of miles away from each other, even at the end. He guesses that's why her wanting a divorce came as a surprise. He thought it was all the same to her. That, like him, she'd figure it was easier to stay chained to each other for Christopher and hope that now that they were older and supposedly wiser, they could be in love after all. But she didn't. They almost never gave each other pleasant surprises. Just like their differences never complemented each other's. They were too similar for that. And the realization that their broken pieces didn't quite fit together only caused frustration. Now that Shannon's dead, Eddie wonders if he's somehow gotten some of her sadness. Even though he knows grief is the most likely answer. He did love her. The mother of his child. They always had a connection. Even when she wasn't there. Which is probably why her absence hurts so much. But now the connection is one way, and she's never coming back, because the world's not fair. It really isn't, because everything else aside, Eddie and Shannon aside, for the first time, Eddie and Shannon and Christopher were at least a family, no one missing. And Eddie's never going to really know what that would have been like. Christopher is never going to know what could have been. Shannon's never going to know, because blunt forces took her body, and it all makes Eddie sick. It would have been good for Christopher to have both of them, divorce or not, because maybe together, Eddie and Shannon could have made one happy person, one perfect parent for their son. But it's too late now. Shannon's gone and Eddie's exhausted, and Christopher doesn't want to make him sad, and Eddie doesn't want to be sad, but he is. He's sad and he's furious at himself, and he's bitter and he's empty, and he's choking on his own pain, all of the things he can usually ignore with work or exercise or taking care of his kid pushed to the front of his mind, and he's haunted by blunt force trauma. He's an asshole, an unfit father. Definitely an unfit husband, a control freak, a guy who's learned the right things to do and say to pretend he's fine when he's not. Everyone deals with trauma in their own way. Yeah, he fucking hates his way. He hates the anger. He hates the broken space between what he knows he should feel, what he wishes he could feel, and what he does. The way that nothing is uncomplicated in his brain, even when it should be. Why can't we just be happy together? He wanted to ask Shannon, but he didn't, because he knew the answer. Fighting used to be uncomplicated, but it's not anymore. Not after what he did, not after he stopped being able to control himself. There are things Eddie can't control. The worst part of that is that most of those things exist inside him. He doesn't know why he's here anymore. It's all slipped away. He had to get out of the house. It was empty without Christopher. Eddie's not sure if he's feeling this way because Christopher's not there to be his whole world, or if Christopher's with his abuela because Eddie knew he was going to start feeling this way, and intolerably. At least that means It's not always like this, right? He's struggling to remember. It's a bad night, and Eddie's distracted, and he's sitting still and spinning out of control, and he wants to do something about that. Wants to hurt himself. Wants to draw blood, but it's not a good idea. There's no reason to hurt himself. No reason to hurt someone else. There never was. He was never honest with Buck. I didn't want to hurt you. I wanted to hurt me. It's a bad night, and Eddie mostly knows where he is, but he's not sure how to get home. He's stranded himself. It's not the first time. His phone is heavy in his back pocket. He takes it out. He hesitates before calling. Maybe he should just get an Uber. Not bother him again. He looks out at the street from the bench he's chosen. A car could stop here. Eddie has a vision of himself beating some random driver who said a single stupid word nearly to death. And he rubs a hand over his head, uncomfortable with the thought. He'd never do that. He knows he'd never do that. Maybe it's his brain, brutal as usual, telling him that he knows who he needs to call. I'd rather you call me, Buck said last time. Eddie finds Buck in his contacts with the help of muscle memory. The phone rings twice before Buck picks up. Eddie? Buck asks, dread in his voice that makes Eddie's stomach churn. Buck, Eddie responds. I need a ride home. There's a heavy sigh on the other line, and Eddie grimaces. Sorry. No, Buck says. No, it's totally fine. Just stay where you are. Matt, I know, Buck says, cutting him off. I know where you are. It's funny. Buck remembers these moments better than Eddie. He stares at the black screen of his phone until Buck's Jeep is idling in front of him. He stands before Buck can piss him off by honking the horn and gets in the car. He leans his head against the window. He doesn't look at Buck, because he doesn't want to see him right now. He doesn't want to see a mirror image of the times before this one. Buck's 5 o'clock shadow and mussed hair, and just thrown on clothes and tired expression. Tired because he got woken up, or tired because of Eddie, or both. Sorry I woke you up, Eddie says. Because there's a lot of things to apologize for right now, but that's the only one he can choke out. Guilt burning at him along with relief that he's going to get out of here now and he doesn't have to go alone. Who said you woke me up? Buck says in a tight monotone. Eddie's eyes flick over to the Jeep's digital clock. It's 3 in the morning. Buck sighs. Yeah. Don't worry about it. The car isn't going yet, and Eddie feels a spark of confused impatience. You're not driving. You still need to put your seatbelt on, Buck says, and Eddie blinks down at himself. He doesn't have his seatbelt on. He stares at it for a moment, his brain whirring like a stuck toy car, until Buck says, Do you want me to do it for you? Eddie feels a surge of humiliation at that, and it makes his body finally move. Click. Seatbelt's on. Time to go. Eddie leans his head against the window again. He says, No. Great, let's go home, Buck says. Eddie doesn't ask whose place he's talking about. They drive for a few minutes until Buck's allergy to silence kicks in. You're gonna get jumped at some point, he points out, drumming his fingers against the steering wheel of the Jeep. Eddie stares out of the car window, watching the city lights pass him by. "Okay," he mutters, and Buck sighs heavily. "You say that every time." "What else do you want me to say?" Eddie asks. "You're right, Buck. At some point, I'm going to get jumped, or mugged, or shot, or something, because I'm just hanging out on a bench, surrounded by randos, and some of them are probably violent, because there's a fight club like 5 blocks from here. Guess I'll stop doing this," Buck says without missing a beat, and Eddie's lips twitch upwards. "What if I am one of those violent randos?" Buck groans. "Don't." Eddie's not sure exactly what Buck's telling him not to do, so he goes back to doing nothing. And because Eddie's so special, even Buck can't seem to gather up the energy to start talking again. Eddie told Buck he was exhausting. That was a stupid fucking thing to say, considering Eddie right now. And Eddie's still surprised Buck's never thrown it back at him. "Maybe you should try whining more," Buck says in Eddie's head, "instead of keeping it inside, asshole." It's probably that Buck's a better person than Eddie. No, yeah, it's definitely that. Buck's one of the best people Eddie knows, probably one of Eddie's favorite people in the world, and right now, he's driving Eddie home, and it's a relief. Eddie's body was so tense it hurt. Eddie only knows that because some of that tension started to leak out the moment he felt Buck's presence. Of all the people in the world, Buck is the only one Eddie wants to be with at this moment. Eddie knows that that's important, much as he's not feeling it. He doesn't think about it either. "Where's Christopher?" Buck asks. "At least Eddie hasn't shut him up completely then." "With Abuela," Eddie says. "Tomorrow, Carla's going to pick him up." "Did you think this was going to happen?" Buck asks, and Eddie shrugs. "Don't know what you're talking about." "Oh yeah, I love it when you play dumb," Buck mutters darkly. "I don't want to talk about it." "Do you ever?" Buck asks, white-knuckling the steering wheel, a spark of frustration in his voice. "Have you ever wanted to talk about anything? Because I have a hard time believing you just have nothing to say." Feeling both wide awake and half asleep, Eddie murmurs, "Don't know." Even though, of course, he has things to say. The problem, too much of the time, is that when he actually finds it in him to say something of substance without being pushed, he's afraid of what other people might think, that he's stupid or weak or incapable, or he's afraid he'll cry, which is just embarrassing. And he never knows how to say enough. He never seems to find the magic words that will make people love him, or believe in him, or stay. Sometimes, when Eddie's with Buck, he feels like there's something important he has to tell him. But he sure as hell doesn't know how, and he sure as hell doesn't want to mess things up by trying to explain himself. On a good day, Eddie's near Buck. Eddie's touching him. Eddie's in the kitchen with him, and he feels something bright and intoxicating that he can't recognize. On a good day. Sometimes even on a bad day. Because Buck can make bad days better. Buck makes things better. Bad nights aren't so easy. But Eddie guesses there's a reason it's Buck he calls, as shitty as he feels about it. Eddie calls, and Buck gets in the car and goes to pick him up. And Eddie knows it's not fair. He knows he's not enough for all this work. But Buck comes when he calls, and Eddie can't seem to stop calling. Can't seem to stop craving Buck's presence, and how he feels when he shows up, the relief and affection and gratitude, how he feels better, in spite of Buck's exhaustion, in spite of Eddie's, In spite of the fact that these nights are a guilty secret between them in the daytime, when Eddie can do everything in his power to be okay again. To be present again. There's a lot between him and Buck. But the things that pushed them away from each other just seem to push them back together. They met each other again in those spaces. Buck couldn't bail him out of jail, but he's made up for that a million times over. Because right now, Buck kind of feels like the only thing in the world that's actually with him. And Eddie would say, "I want you to need me, but I need you right now, so thank you for being here." But that's one of those things that say way too much and not even close to enough at the same time. So all he does is confirm that he doesn't know what he fucking wants, and then he shuts up. He's the strong, silent type. Buck pulls into his parking lot. Looks like they'll stay at Buck's place tonight. Eddie doesn't care. He trusts Buck to make a reasonable choice, which he knows everyone would laugh at, Buck included, but he also knows everyone underestimates Buck, just like they overestimate Eddie, because Buck is wild and exciting, and all Eddie's doing is going through the motions. Eddie stumbles his way out of the car. He's exhausted. Though he slept last night, he just didn't feel very well rested after. He's been having nightmares. Those he absolutely doesn't want to talk about or think about. The helicopter goes down. Eddie rescues Shannon's broken body from inside, but it's too late. It's always too late. He has nothing to say about those. Eddie goes into Buck's loft and stands there. He's either hesitating or frozen. Everything seems really bright. Eddie managed to not look right at Buck for the whole car ride, but now Buck's in front of him and Eddie can't look away and isn't trying to, even though Buck's face, as Eddie expected, tells the same old story. That he got woken up, that he rolled out of bed and got into his car, and went looking for Eddie, because Eddie couldn't get himself home. Eddie's breath catches. Buck's expression is tired and sad, and there's a twist of bitterness to his lips. And his gaze is intense, as though he's looking for something in Eddie that Eddie's pretty sure he won't find, because he doesn't know what it is either. The piece of him that could make him stop doing stuff like this. That could make him stop feeling like this. Something broken to confirm he's fixable. Eddie stares back at Buck, taking him in. He feels so real and so vital, and Eddie knew he'd feel this way when he saw Buck. The gnawing hunger and the itch to touch him. And he clenches his fists because he wants to punch something. Not Buck, not ever, but his eyes drift to the wall behind him, and he imagines it. He imagines his fists leaving bloody streaks. Now, in his mind, he's surrounded by fencing, and he's beaten and bloody but still standing, and there's no opponent. There never was. Beaten as he is, it was all him. He's surrounded by people watching him bleed, watching him suffer, watching him fight, and they're screaming. Cheering or booing or taunting, it doesn't matter. They see him. On his skin, they see everything he's done to keep himself together. Eddie stands, beaten to shit and so angry he's free, and he thrusts his fists into the air like he's won, even though there's no way to win, and he screams, "Look at me! Look at me! I'm in pain!" And they see. At least, when Eddie was covered in bruises, someone could see how much things hurt, even though Eddie couldn't really admit it. A hand comes down on Eddie's shoulder and squeezes, and Eddie starts. He looks at Buck, who gives him a half smile. Buck looks sad. Eddie wishes he wouldn't. Eddie wishes he could be better. Eddie wants to hug him, but that would mostly be for Eddie. "Let's go to bed, man," Buck says, and his hand trails down Eddie's shoulder and bicep to his elbow, and he pulls Eddie up the stairs and into his room. The lights are off, and the covers are rumpled, and Eddie recognizes the room like this. He welcomes it. It feels like a lived-in place. It feels like a familiar place. Probably because it's Buck's. Eddie strips down to his underwear. He feels embarrassed about it for half a second, but he shrugs that off. Eddie sits on Buck's bed. He should get under the covers, but instead he sits and stares into space, eyes burning. Now what? Usually, he just goes to sleep. And if he dreams, he at least wakes up to Buck and not his empty room. He's so exhausted, he doesn't want to sleep. He doesn't want to sleep alone. Buck, dressed in pajamas, goes and sits next to him on his bed. He puts his hand on Eddie's bare knee and squeezes. Eddie feels his head roll to the side and rest on Buck's shoulder. Right. Yeah. He's not alone. He doesn't have to sleep alone. Thank God. "I hate seeing you like this," Buck says. "Like what?" Eddie asks. And Buck makes an annoyed sound. He thinks Eddie's joking or something, but Eddie's not. He doesn't know what it is Buck sees on these nights. He doesn't really know what he's feeling on these nights, only that it hurts. "You tell me," Buck says, as though it's a challenge. And Eddie's never actually said it before, never said what he had to say, but maybe Buck deserves to hear it. Maybe Eddie wants to speak it. "I'm in pain," Eddie admits. The words aren't enough. They obviously aren't enough, but they're the truth. Buck takes in a shaky breath, as though he's surprised. And not at the words, but that Eddie said them, and he presses a kiss to Eddie's head. Eddie closes his eyes. "I can see that," Buck says, his voice somewhere between mournful and dry. And Eddie's chest is twisting, and his face is burning, and his heart is beating too loud, and the words make the emptiness in him feel less like despair and more like freedom. "Thank you," he says, breathless with relief. Buck puts his arm around Eddie's shoulders and pulls him close. "No problem." Eddie knows that that's not true. But he also knows that Buck believes it. It's one of the reasons that he loves him so much. Buck gets into bed, and so does Eddie. He adjusts himself without thinking so that his head is on Buck's chest. He can feel Buck breathing. Alive. It helps remind Eddie that he's alive too. The end.